Welcome to Beyond the Ballot. I'm Max, joined by my co-host Rory. And this week, we're covering major political developments on both sides of the Atlantic. From Reform UK unveiling a full cabinet-style front bench, to US courts ruling against Trump-era tariffs, to renewed scrutiny around Prince Andrew, and new education guidelines reshaping the student debt debate. We'll break down what's happening, why it matters, and what it means for voters, taxpayers, and everyday families navigating economic uncertainty. So let's get into it. On February 17th, 2026, Reform leader Nigel Farage unveiled what he's called a cabinet-ready frontbench team, effectively a shadow cabinet designed to show that this party is prepared to govern. And this marks a significant shift. Reform is no longer positioning itself as a protest movement. It's presenting itself as a government in waiting. So let's go over the key appointments. So let's touch on the headline news, and that it is the recent Conservative defectant, Robert Jenrick, has been gifted the role of Shadow Chancellor. Now, Rory, hello, welcome to the show.
Yeah, it's great to be back again.
What do you think about this? Is it too soon, maybe, to appoint someone who has just defected from the Conservatives to Reform? And could this turn into maybe just a newer version of the Tories, in fact?
Yeah, well, Robert Jenrick, I think he's unfairly being called Shadow Chancellor, even though that role is obviously, or that title is for Mel Stride, who's a Tory Shadow Chancellor, because that's their...
They're obviously the Shadow Cabinet.
They're the Shadow Cabinet, but this is like the spokespeople, I guess. So I'll refer to them as such. Like the Liberal Democrats. Robert Jenrick, yeah, he defected in January. He was Shadow Justice Secretary, the proper Shadow Justice Secretary, and now he's been given an upgrade. He's now in the running to be a member of or a leader in one of the great offices of state, obviously Chancellor, Prime Minister, Home Secretary and Foreign Secretary. So this is definitely a good boost for him, especially given like how Reform's doing in the polls. They're doing much better than the Conservatives. So this is definitely a better role with better prospects of actual like tangible power than what he had previously. He does have ministerial experience. He was the first housing secretary under Boris Johnson.
So that's going to give him some experience working
with
funds, yeah.
I think he had a press conference. So he was obviously unveiled on Tuesday. He had a press conference on Wednesday in London, and I think you saw a lot of kind of Toryism inside Reform.
So he's not really.
He's not. I mean, he says the Tory brand is finished. And to be honest, well, I mean, the Tory brand's not in a good spot. But I think it doesn't really help the arguments that Reform like is like a clean slate, it's a fresh party. Cause, like, to be honest, if they're promising huge tax cuts, huge cuts to spending, I mean, Kemi announced this like months ago, so. I think some people say that the Reform Party is like the Tories 2.0, but honestly, I think they're the Tories 0.5. I mean, I think they lack credibility. I think bring Jenrick in the first place was a bit desperate.
Yeah.
Because, every department he's gone into, housing...
He's made of a mess,
housing and communities. I mean, Boris Johnson's main plan was to level up and... Obviously, COVID happened, so we couldn't level up. Then Jenrick went into the Treasury, and then he voted for Liz Truss's mini budget,
which spiked the economic crisis.
So he was in the Treasury. He's been in the Treasury, and then there's obviously bad economy. Then he was in the Home Office, and lo and behold, immigration started to become a big problem. And now he's going around as if he's some sort of Mr. Fix-It guy who says that. He knows how to solve the problems, and when asked he just knows how not to make the same mistakes. So,
yeah.
I mean, he doesn't have the solutions. He knows the problems. So I don't think he's very, I just don't like Robert Jenrick. I think he's very something really petty about him, not very loyal. And given that he's got such a like a prominent major role in this
shadow
front bench team or whatever, I think he could maybe pose a challenge to Farage, like obviously Rupert Lowe's doing with his new party, Restore Britain, which is now sweeping a lot of the polls, a lot of the comments on Reform's Instagram now.
Yeah, and if we talk about comments made by the Conservative chairman, Kevin Hollenrake, and he says that Reform's front bench looks more like a tribute act to the old Conservative Party than a credible alternative. Or the Labour Party chairwoman, Anna Turley, and she said that Farage's top team was made up of failed Tories. They failed Britain before, and they would do the same again under Reform. So I feel like that is...
Well, I think Anna Turley's on a bit of a high horse. She talks about...
Failing Britain.
Failing Britain. Then... Yeah, maybe look at yourself and look at your party. But no, I think I do agree with the chairman of the Tory party, Kevin Hollenrake. Out of the front bench team, two were Tory MPs this time, not this time last year, 2 months ago. Both were Tory MPs 2 months ago. Zia Youssef, who he was a Tory until like 2019 or something. Richard Tice was a Tory until 2019. Farage himself was a Tory until like 1992. So maybe that's maybe a little less to justify. But the fact is, he's unveiled four roles. Two of them have gone to defectees, one of which only joined the party like less than a month ago.
Is it desperation, would you say? Like getting... Well, they're going... he's trying to show that his party is ready to govern with just people who have experience in office.
Yeah, but the problem
but
with
maybe have not done
experience
as much.
Experience brings in establishment, and I think those are two conflicting arguments inside Reform. Half say, oh, well, this team lacks experience, so we're going to have to bring people in. Other half says, oh, no, we can't bring people like Restore Britain. Say, oh, we can't bring these people in because they stink of the establishment and they're going to fail our country again. And so that you can't really balance it correctly. I think Nigel Farage so far has been able to balance it really well. But I think this shadow team, I don't think, obviously it's going to be a bit of a hurdle to justify these appointments. And I think that's why you're seeing a lot of Reform voters actually leave Reform now and go to Restore Britain, which is even further right.
Yeah.
And that's led by Rupert Lowe, who was a Reform MP, and then he got kicked out for allegedly bullying Zia Youssef.
How high up was he? I don't know much about this, if you want to explain.
So Rupert Lowe, he's very popular inside Reform, even though he's not in it anymore. But he was one of the original five Reform MPs who were elected in 2024. He's the MP for Great Yarmouth, which is in Norfolk, I think. He got kicked out of the party and lost the party whip for allegedly bullying and making physical threats to party chairman at the time, Zia Youssef, who we're going to talk about in a minute. And so he got kicked out of the party. What was interesting was that he established this party last week or the week before. I think it was Friday, 2 weeks, last Friday or the week Friday before that. And he was obviously, Farage was asked about this in the shadow cabinet, like unveiling or shadow front bench team unveiling like press conference.
Yes.
And he said like, Rupert Lowe was saying things that he actually didn't say. But more importantly, he said, oh, that's why we had to get rid of him, implying that it wasn't Lowe who got rid of himself. It was actually Reform who got rid of Lowe.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's a lot of dishonesty around that and people asking a lot of questions around that. But yeah, so we can go to Zia Youssef.
We will go to Zia Youssef now, yeah.
He's obviously, if you think about Reform, if you think about Reform, their main issue... Immigration
is their main thing.
He is the Home Affairs
spokesperson.
Sky News says justice. I don't think he's got justice yet.
No, he's not. No,
he's
not,
just home. He Home Office.
Home Office. Yeah.
He had a press conference today. So we record on Mondays. So he had a press conference this Monday.
Earlier today. Yeah.
Yeah.
And in terms of Reform's core policies, immigration obviously makes up the four things that they're trying to crack down on.
Yeah.
Maybe you could say.
What would you argue the other three are?
I was going to go immigration reforms, energy independence.
Yeah.
Tax cuts, simplification, and like a cultural and educational reform, really.
Yeah, I guess you're saying that.
What they're going to really try to change, especially with the appointment of Suella Braverman.
I have a lot to say about
into
that.
Into the education department.
And skills,
but with... Zia Youssef, I think
I think he's very...
He could do a good job, I think.
I think he is very, very, very credible. I think as a person, I don't like the way he conducts himself. I think he's a bit snobby. But I think he's got... He's obviously a son of Sri Lankan parents. So he's got his own... He's got his own kind of like story to tell. Yeah. So he's got credibility on that front. I mean, he's been on Question Time. I've seen him on Question Time so much, and he's been talking about immigration quite fiercely. So I think, and also he's kind of led Operation Restoring Justice, which was kind of a reform campaign to like a semi-justice in the name that, and like, semi-immigration kind of campaign in that they launched in the summer.
I think he's
credible. He's Muslim himself, and he's now calling on people tackling radical Islam. So I think
illegal immigration as well.
And illegal immigration. Yeah. So yeah, I think he's got credibility. Yeah.
Would you say he's maybe similar to Shabana Mahmood, maybe in terms of credibility
yes,
and views, maybe as well.
Definitely.
Because they both want to have this almost mass deportation of illegal immigrants.
Yeah, well they're against immigration, yeah. They've both got background in migration, and they have a credible viewpoint. Obviously, if you have Nigel Farage saying immigration's terrible,
immigration is
a big problem.
Story,
but I would probably trust someone who is born of. Well, I wouldn't not trust maybe, but like, I trust the opinion. I trust the argument if someone who themselves was a descendant of like migration kind of related background,
yes.
I would have more credibility and faith in the movement if they said that it was like credible or good themselves. So yeah, I think it was a good appointment. I don't really like Zia Yusuf himself. I don't like, he resigned as party chairman last year, which is in a bit of a weird kind of move.
Especially since he's now just got a job in the
front bench team. But yeah, I think it's a pretty good smart appointment.
Yeah. And in terms of other appointments, Suella Braverman being appointed education, skills and equalities. Yes. Well, what do you think about that, really?
I think Suella, contrary to what I think many would say, I think she's probably been the most consequential defector. I think...
But though Priti Patel and Suella Braverman, both ran the same office.
They ran the same office, yes. But I think Suella Braverman, I think she's got a lot of... I don't know. I don't like it when people defect. But I think there was something specifically about Suella. Obviously, when she was Home Secretary in 2023, I really liked her. I still do. I think she's probably been the worst, other than Robert Jenrick. I think she's probably been the worst defector. But I think her policy themselves, I quite liked them. I'm not gonna hold it back. I did like them. I think she did have a lot of. She had a point.
Yes.
I think interesting
education,
her skills, I think was really interesting. She wants to get 50% of people into the trades, which she said in quite an awkward way. And obviously the crowd kind of had to cheer and whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think that's quite, yeah, she's putting a spin on some of the new Labour kind of tactics. Instead of like 50% of people going to university, it's more 50% of young people going to the trades. But I think she's obviously got background in schools, and I didn't actually know that until she was unveiled. And she
yeah, because I would have thought that she would have maybe
she was much more of a. But I think she, I think her ideology, I think, definitely aligns really well with reforms, especially on education. So I think she is also a very good appointment. I think what I thought was even more, she won the patriotic curriculum, which I. Patriotic balance curriculum, and I think she had a lot of substantial points to that, and I think that's definitely a move to try and get a lot of Tories, a lot of Restore Britain on side. And to be honest, I kind of agree on some of the stuff that she says in principle, but I think her most interesting thing was equalities, and that's the things that have come in the headlines. she would be the Minister for Women and Equalities. And the first thing she would do as Minister of Women and Equalities would be to completely scrap the department. So she's also added another joke that she would kind of get rid of the job that she was put in. I don't know. I think I'm a bit sceptical about this. They're going to repeal the Equalities Act. I think they're going to want to say it for headlines. I think there are some bits of the Act which are probably much more easy to criticise, but also there are some bits in the Act, like the equality bits themselves, that,
yes,
like, I think would be very dangerous to get rid of, even if it's for, like, a month or 2 months or however long they're going to plan it. They said that they want to scrap it. Then I'm sure they're thinking now, and I wouldn't be surprised they come out next week in a Suella press conference and say, oh, no, we're not going to repeal it. We're just going to make some changes to it. I think that's probably what they're going to do in another U-turn.
Yeah.
I think out of the four that they announced, I think I'm most content with Suella Braverman.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, when I think about Suella Braverman, I didn't initially think about education, skills, inequalities.
No, I think actually,
main thing that they think.
Yeah,
about.
Yeah. I think her ideology and her skill set definitely. Obviously, being in the Home Office,
yeah.
She has failed in the Home Office. She's gonna say, "Oh, it was all Rishi Sunak," which probably it was, but I think she's got too much baggage on that. So I think education and equalities is a very good role for her to have,
especially with all the different. The conversations about, obviously, Bridget Phillipson releasing her changes to
changes, but yeah, I think also gender ideology, I think, and the culture wars. I think she's going to be the culture war person now.
Yeah.
Suella, and I think she's actually good on that front. So, yeah, I'm quite content.
She's obviously going to have to not, like, come to an agreement. Obviously, she has to work closely with the other parties.
Yeah, well, I think the Tories...
people.
The Tories,
well,
yeah.
I think Laura Trott and Suella Braverman could work well
together. I think they could work well
together. I think they could work well together. I don't know about Bridget Phillipson working
well
together.
No, I don't
They're
know.
On different ends of the spectrum.
Think, yeah,
I don't
they're on different
think
ends
that
of the
would
spectrum.
Work.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I like Laura Trott. Well, we spoke about that last week as well.
And final question for you, Rory. Do you think the voters, obviously thinking about maybe a potential election coming up, maybe if Keir Starmer or...
If
any sort of general election
happens. Well, before we go on to that question, we have missed one cabinet announcement. Deputy Prime Minister,
Deputy Leader in Business, Business Trade
Richard
Tice.
So he's now going to start create a department called BTE, which is Business Trade and Energy, which I think is quite a funky combo, if I may say so myself. Business and Trade is already a department. He's going to add energy to that.
Yeah,
I'm not really sure why. I think it doesn't make a lot of sense if he's trying to condense departments down. Because energy, I would think, would go more with environment.
Yeah, because he's spoken about using oil and gas to help boost economic growth despite the fact that they are non-renewable.
Yeah.
And maybe looking to... Because he's obviously abandoning net zero targets.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's the most sustainable idea. And I think he should maybe look towards... Renewable energy is obviously
But I don't think it's rooted. It is rooted in Reform's DNA that they actually hate net zero. They think it's some sort of hoax.
I know.
They're climate deniers. They think that they just want cheap energy now. They want to drill in the North Sea. I think, yes, we can't properly stop oil consumption cold turkey, but we need to obviously make a sustainable transition to green energy. Even though the weather's really bad here, a lot of rain. We're literally an island, so we can use hydropower. We have strong winds, so we can use wind power.
Yeah.
Yes, we don't have sun, but we have the other two. And we have nuclear power plants everywhere. So
yeah.
I don't know. I think that's much more sustainable.
Yeah.
I think that's much more sensible. Richard Tice, he's now this department. He's saying, oh, it's some sort of super department. Pat McFadden made a super department out of, he took the skills, which is in Suella Braverman's brief, out of education. Pat McFadden, who's Labour Work and Pensions Secretary. He put it into work and pensions, obviously skills. Skills and work I would put together, so yeah, that makes sense. But
they're
not
quite
sure...
interchangeable, dependent, certain parts. If we look at Labour's cabinet, I remember, I don't know, housing could work with the Chancellor, or work and pensions can work with skills, something like that. Like that, there can be links between
them. There are departments that I think make sense together. I think energy and environment go well together. I think business and trade and the actual treasury, the Chancellor, go well together. I think the Home Office and justice go well together. That's kind of under the policing kind of umbrella. I'm trying to think of a few more off the cuff. I think Northern Ireland, Wales and Scotland are all kind of a group. They're kind of a regional group. I think that could even go with local government as well.
Yes.
Maybe you can create a super regional department and take kind of dissolve the housing communities and local government, I think. Communities and local government, maybe you can put into regional. Housing, I don't know what you do with housing. I think housing's got to be its own department at this point, because it's also a very bad issue.
Especially with the housing prices increasing.
Yeah.
Especially like young graduates struggling to find housing, which we're going to come across later as well.
Actually, in some cases, you did mention the Treasury and housing. The Tories want to scrap stamp duty on people's first like primary residential home. I think that's tax cuts and housing together.
Interest as well on student loans.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that a bit later.
And in terms of, if I was a voter thinking about who I was going to vote for, let's say I was a Reform voter before, and I was a supporter of Reform, and I looked at the changes, I'd probably think, why am I seeing recycled politics? Yeah. I came here for a fresh idea, fresh perspective. Oh, I think, oh, great, Nigel Farage, oh, he's a great leader. They got great ideas about immigration. And then they suddenly just bring in loads of Tory defectants. And I'm thinking, hang on a minute, this is not what I signed up for, what I mean.
And I think that's why a lot of people are now turning their backs on Reform. And they're moving to Rupert Lowe's new outfit, Restore Britain.
Yeah.
Which could merge with Ben Habib's outfit. So Ben Habib was the former deputy leader of Reform.
So
Rupert Lowe was a former Reform. So,
yeah.
I mean, Reform is kind of imploding a bit. So Advanced UK, which is another kind of right-wing to far-right party, could merge with Restore Britain. They're very quite chummy together. I mean, that's what party leader Ben Habib has literally said on Talk TV. But I think those Reform voters who hate the establishment, they hate the Conservatives, they're moving to Restore Britain because they think that Reform is now being plagued with all this Tory failure. And I think, to be honest, I'm a Conservative, but I think people are saying, oh, Reform are Conservative 2.0. No, they're not. They've got four former Tory MPs, Danny Kruger, Robert Jenrick, Andrew Rosendale, and Suella Braverman. Tory's got 116. The Tory's got a full shadow cabinet, a full one, not just four or five people. The Tories are unleashing policy, scrap stamp duty, cut interest rates on student loans.
Yeah.
This new British ICE kind of border force thing, ban social media for under 16s, all these kind of stuff.
These fresh policies.
Scrap business rates on high streets and pubs. And I think Reform, they're saying, oh yeah, we've got this 5-point plan for pubs. Yeah, but what have you got for the high street? What have you got for any of other stuff? And they're going to go around and say, oh, Rupert Lowe, oh, you're far right. Well, everyone was saying that about you like 2 years ago, so I'm not really sure. I don't think they've got any legs to stand on. They're not established, because yes, they've got two or three former Tories, former secretaries, yeah, okay, fine, but equally you're not a clean slate after that, and that's why a lot of people are getting really annoyed, and that's why they're going to like complete lunatics like Rupert Lowe and his ideology. I'm not gonna say I quite like Rupert Lowe. I think as a person, a lot of Reform voters like Rupert Lowe, I'll put it that way. As a person, he makes a bit of sense. He can construct arguments very well, but I think he's way too radical for me, to be honest.
You're gonna get from maybe someone who's
as
far right as Rupert Lowe, especially.
Yeah,
when
I guess that's what people.
If your party is called Restore Britain, then
it's obviously very. It's very anti-multicultural.
Multicultural.
Yeah, cultural.
Yeah. Now we're going to be discussing some of the headline news from last week and news that has dropped just now in the studio
Literally
itself.
Literally just now.
Now, if we took what happened last week, Prince Andrew has, or Andrew Mountbatten Windsor now, he was obviously arrested for misconduct in the public office, and he's facing renewed scrutiny related to his, obviously, his ongoing reputational and legal fallout from past allegations with his association with the known sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. And just right now, Rory and I have just heard that Peter Mandelson, the former US ambassador, has been arrested.
Good riddance.
So this helps out with the segment now. So we're going to talk about... So, Rory, what do you think? Is this a good move, maybe, from the police having a crackdown on, obviously, the allegations that have come out from the Epstein files, would you say?
Yeah. Well, I have precisely zero respect for the former Prince Andrew, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. I think he's an absolute disgrace.
Well, obviously to the monarchy as well. Like King Charles is your brother.
I am a strong monarchist. I think he's an absolute disgrace to the entire brand. And now you get, I said Rupert Lowe was a lunatic, but you get absolute nut jobs like Zara Sultana and Jeremy Corbyn, who now start saying, oh, let's abolish the monarchy. No, I don't think we should be abolishing the monarchy. I think the king made a really good move in kicking Andrew.
No, but the king didn't know about the arrest.
No, he didn't know about the rest, but I think the way he's planning to cooperate with the police. I think is completely correct. I don't think you should tarnish the royal family with the same brush. I have immense respect for the king, for Queen Camilla, for the Prince and Princess of Wales. Maybe not Prince Harry.
Well, that's another story.
But yeah. I think Andrew has been such a drain on any support or respect for the royal family. And I'm so glad that he's finally coming to justice, because what he's done was absolutely, despicable.
Yeah, what he's, it's shocking, not only that he's
abusing innocent girls, but also that he's now spilling state secrets to convicted paedophiles.
Yeah, but the thing is that he's saying that, why are you denying the allegations? There are pictures of you with Epstein.
There are pictures of you doing some sort of prank.
There's no point. Just own up, okay? Because if I was thinking about whether I want a monarchy or not, if Andrew, he's still in the line.
He's
for the
eighth
throne,
in line. If he ever
became king, I'd say we go to a republic.
I wouldn't say we go to a republic. No, but I would go out there and ask for him to abdicate. I mean, I hate the man.
It's bad for reputation as well, especially since obviously King Charles is going to the USA to have a meeting with Trump.
Yeah.
And Trump was saying it's a shame that Prince Andrew's, like Andrew Mountbatten Windsor's been arrested.
Yeah, I don't think there's any... I think he just says that because I think Trump has immense respect for the royal family.
The royal family, of course.
And to be honest, he's quite clever in some aspects, but he's really stupid in a lot of other aspects. So I don't think he's probably up to date with all the stuff that's going on, even though he's literally at the centre of it.
Yes.
But I wouldn't expect that much from the President of the United States, which is a bit of a shame, because I would if it wasn't him.
And I feel sorry for everyone in the family, really, like just to deal.
I mean, they're
with,
all being like, yeah, to deal with their the responsibility of, to clear up the mess and the screw ups of the Queen's favorite son, who's a bit of a snobby prat.
That's fine. Keep going. That's fine. You can call him that.
Yeah, no, I'm gonna call him that. I don't have any shame in that, because I'm quite strong in my opposition to him. I think he's a disgrace, and I would be really glad if Keir Starmer, in one of his final acts as Prime Minister, touch wood, follows Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese and agrees or supports him being kicked out of the, line of succession.
Yes. And I'm just thinking about Peter Mandelson. I mean, we just heard about it. I mean, Keir Starmer must be thinking, what have I done? Why would I have appointed him as our US ambassador? That is also embarrassing.
Well, that's a
on
really
his part, that is embarrassing.
That's an interesting question, because I think you could say on the flip side, he might be thinking, oh, why have I appointed him as US ambassador? I think a lot of people across the country are thinking, oh, why have I voted for Keir Starmer to be prime minister? This is so embarrassing. This has dragged on way too long. I think he's at every... hurdle he's failed. He could have kicked Lord Mandelson out of the ambassador
and the House. Well, he didn't get the House of Lords as
He didn't get kicked out of the House of Lords. He had to resign from the House of Lords after he resigned from the Labour Party and got the whip removed or whatever, and that was after growing public pressure,
yes,
which you cannot argue was orchestrated by the Labour Party. Yeah, I think he's so dodgy. He's already had to leave government twice under Tony Blair for other scandals. So he's a scandal-ridden man. I don't know why he hasn't been arrested earlier, but I think at least the police have done their job. They've ticked a box and they've got rid of a dangerous man.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at an article now here. It says that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor charged taxpayers for massages and excessive travel costs while working as the UK's trade envoy. So once again, it's just this exploitation.
What's your source?
BBC.
Okay, fine.
So, yeah, I mean, why you need to be... Obviously, reputation is really important. And the real question is, can the royal family contain this scandal without a constitutional reform? Mm. I mean, it's obviously younger voters are thinking now the question is popping into their heads. Why should we have a monarchy anymore? Especially after all of this controversy. And I mean, even Prince William's ashamed to talk about it in public. Like, it's a really damning verdict, especially for a group of people who really represent the values of this country, just obviously apart from Andrew.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously, I think younger voters, they're far more liberal than older voters. Older voters are far more conservative, obviously, yeah. And they're far more monarchist. Parties who are not staunchly, like, going to protect the monarchy, like the Greens, arguably like some factions of the Labour Party, they're doing very well in the polls. Maybe not the Labour Party, but I'm sure if the left usurped the wetness and the wetness and the dryness at the same time of Keir Starmer, and then maybe the Labour could go up in the polls as well. But the fact is, the Greens, who are far more radical than the Labour Party, are surging the polls. They're doing really well with younger voters. They're far more they're far more against the monarchy as a kind of idea. I think that's a much more modern idea as well. I don't support them. I'm in the minority of young people that do support the monarchy. But yeah, I think there is definitely a growing frustration, especially after this, that the monarchy are just, maybe this is the straw that breaks the camel's back. I mean, yeah, but yeah, it's very complex. I think it's important that we can't tarnish people with the same brush. We can't just say, yeah, well, one of the former princes is an absolute imbecile, so let's just get rid of the whole lot. I think that would be extremely unwise. And also, where are you going to put that executive power? Are you going to bring a president? What happens if someone like Donald Trump becomes president? What happens if someone like Rupert Lowe or Zara Sultana, God forbid, becomes president? That would be terrible.
That'd be horrible, yeah.
I mean, yes, we give the royal family a lot of money, and yes, they give us even more money back. So I don't know what the kind of political gains or the economic gains of getting rid of them would be. Yes, they live in a nice palace, but that's their palace and they've lived in there for like 300 years. So I'm not going
to
go out there.
Tradition, you wouldn't want to remove it, would you?
Yeah, well, no, I like that. I'm quite proud of that. It's complex.
Yeah.
I hate Prince Andrew. I love the royal family, but I don't see Prince Andrew as being in the royal family anymore, and that's just kind of reality now.
Yeah, and especially if we look, I mean, people have known about Andrew's association with Epstein for a very long time.
Yeah.
And now that the police have finally decided to crack down on this and obviously arrest him, I think the question poses to Keir Starmer, how is he going to be able to... Because the goal now must be to remove Andrew from the line of succession.
Yes, that's
surely, if you're thinking about it from, I don't know, Keir Starmer's point of view. And, I mean, I feel like he has to make a public announcement, maybe. Talking about Mandelson, because obviously there was all this pressure. McSweeney obviously resigned as his chief of staff. And then all that pressure sort of went away as soon as he held a rally with the rest of the MPs, talking about how he's won every battle he's been in, how hard he's worked to be there, and how he's not going to give up. So I think he has to come out there, make a statement and say, we condemn the actions of Mandelson and Andrew, and it was a mistake, obviously, appointing
him. Yeah, but I think especially on Mandelson, he's just got so much baggage. He can't touch it. It's radioactive and toxic for him. He appointed him as US ambassador to negotiate with someone like Donald Trump. I mean, maybe in hindsight that's quite clever, because the only kind of similarity they've got is that they've got terrible, suspicious associations to Jeffrey Epstein. But I think it's another clear, good example of the shambolicism of, I mean, of Keir Starmer. I mean, he's got a by-election coming up in, this Thursday, in 3 days' time. So maybe on Friday morning, if you hear that, I don't know, the Greens.
Yeah, and we will obviously we'll talk about touch upon that next week's episode.
I mean, if it goes badly, maybe we won't have to talk about the Gaunton Dent by-election. We're going to be talking about Keir Starmer and how he resigns on Saturday or Sunday or something. Because yes. This is a huge Labour rebellion or something. Which I'm quite excited for. So save the date, everyone.
Yeah, and just to end off this segment, I think the Royals are going to deal with this well.
They have dealt with it.
But I think that this is going to chip away at that long-term stability of the monarchy. We might not be alive to see the end of the monarchy.
There won't be. I hope I'm not alive to see a British Republic. Yeah. I'm a staunch monarchist. Look, there have been scandals. There have been problems that the Royals have faced. Obviously, the Aberfan coal disaster in the 1960s, and the Queen didn't like attend as quickly as most would have thought she would have when Diana died. Obviously, there's quite a muted response as well. So they've got through these tough journeys, especially Queen Elizabeth. They've gone through these hard times, but they'll come back, and they still have a lot of support. I think it's a very polarizing issue. You're either for them staunchly or you're against them staunchly.
And so there's not really like a middle ground, really. There's
not really. I think it's much more, yeah, it's like Scottish independence. You're either for it or you're against it, and you're quite strong in your belief for it.
And now we're moving on to our final segment, and we're going to be talking about the new education guidelines that have just been announced today by the Education Secretary, Bridget Phillipson. And this involves changes to EHCPs. So for those of you who don't know what EHCPs are, they are legal documents that identify a pupil's needs. And they set out what support that they should receive in terms of whether they need special assistance or the way that the teaching needs to be tailored to their specific needs. Now, the government is deciding to have every child who is already on an EHCP, they're going to have their needs assessed, and the plan that they are left on will continue with them through primary and secondary school. And personally, I think that sometimes, I don't know about you, Roy, but some students can maybe be taking advantage of the system.
Yeah,
I agree. And pretending that they have certain things that they require that are really just putting a strain on teaching or the different services that we're providing, maybe, would you say?
Yeah, I think there are some people who will they'll see loopholes. I think they're going to not cut corners, I don't want to say that, but I think it's really important that we recognise that there are some people who genuinely need this. And I think what's really disappointing is that you're giving this care and support to people who probably don't need it as much as people who might need it more. I'm saying, like, if you give an hour session to two individuals, one of them needs more help. I'm more in favour of giving maybe the first person half an hour and the second person an hour and a half of that 2 hours.
Yeah.
I think cutting the spending, I'm more sceptical on. I think, yes, we do have to cut spending, but I don't think children is the way to cut it. But definitely reforming side, I think it's got too equal. I think we've got to shift away from equality and move towards equity. I think people should get what they need.
Not what they want, really.
I think there are some, obviously, everyone wants their children to do well at school. And that's totally valid, and I totally understand that opinion.
But you can't really take
advantage.
But
I don't think you should be taking care or support that should
be going to a different student.
Underlined, maybe. Should go to people who need it rather than your child or who would have it maybe to enhance their learning experience. Because, I mean, our education system under the Conservatives was amazing. It was really good.
Michael Gove was very good with his reforms.
Education reform. England started skyrocketing across all the tables in literacy, in spelling, in maths, in science, and all of that. And I think this education reform, maybe it's not the curriculum or like proper hard reforms themselves, but I think the benefits that go into the education system, that is what they're trying to reform. I think in principle, I 100% support the efforts. Yeah. It does need to be reformed. I think the way they're doing it, I understand and I agree with some of the ways that they're trying to do that. But in other ways, I think maybe they're not going as far enough. In other ways, maybe they're not going, they're maybe going too far. So I think it's really important to strike a balance between people who actually need it and people who are probably taking advantage of the system, as you said.
Yeah, and I think that if there was talk the other day on, I think it was Laura Koonsberg on the Sunday, I'm talking about how hard parents had to fight for their children to be able to get these EHCPs. And now that their children are getting reassessed, some could lose them. And that's going to worry parents, these sort of support could not be seen as a crutch, but if it's taken away, performance levels, especially for students that maybe were on them, but they didn't need them, but it did help them, that can lead to obviously performance dips as well at school, I feel like.
Yeah, no, I know a few people who do have this care, and I think all of them deserve it. I think the people who know that they deserve it shouldn't worry at all, because they should have it. I think it's the people who are taking advantage of the system, they should be worried. And I think they are right to be worried, because if you don't need it, common sense, give it to the people who actually need it. If we're spending a whole bunch of money on helping people, let's give it to the people who actually need the help, not everyone else who's doing fine. I think people are scared, but if you're scared, that's quite suspicious, because that implies that your son or your daughter might not pass that test or fail the test to get it. And I think in that case, yes, it's you shouldn't have it. If you don't need it, then you shouldn't have it. So I understand the concerns of people who rightly know that they parents who rightly know that their children need it. But I think if your child doesn't need it and you know they don't need it, then yeah, be scared. I don't care. I think we should take it away from you then and give it to someone who genuinely needs more care or extra support.
Yeah, and just touching on for the listeners now, the government have today just introduced ISPSs. And these stand for individual support plans. And these documents are going to set out a child's needs, what support they should receive, and what it hopes to achieve. And the government described them as these flexible plans that set out the child's needs on a day-to-day basis. And this is opposes to an EHCP, which is the framework. That is legal entitlement to support.
Yeah.
And the ISPS is actually the actual support plan in itself. And if parents aren't happy, apparently, with a child's ISP, they have to go through the school complaint system first before they go to complain to the local authority or to the government. So I feel like that's quite a long-winded process, is it not? So if you're unhappy with your plan you're on, this could take ages for it to change.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you see the NHS, there's a huge backlog. Asylum, there's obviously a huge backlog as well. This is probably going to bring even more pressure on the government. Yes, West Streeting's done well in the NHS, as I compared to seconds ago. And Shabotomy, yeah, she's getting a grip on the asylum crisis, but I don't think this is something that you can probably... you can't really... I don't know how to say it, but it's a weird way of policing it or something. Or it's just another thing that's going to build up over time. There's another thing that's just going to accumulate. And I think... yes, it's probably going to take about 6 months or something. Yeah. And that's too long. That's half the academic year. It could be even more than that. It could be the whole academic year. Yeah. And you've only got, 15? So, and half of them are... well, the first ones are really important, obviously, because that kind of shapes a projection for your next, whatever, 10. So I think if you have a bad start, the odds are not looking great for you. So if we can get more people having a good start, I think that's the aim. That's the right aim. And I think that is what Bridget was trying to do. And I think that's probably the right thing.
And I feel personally, I think that the education department is sometimes overlooked. I mean, personally, I'd put it it's very important, really. Yeah. Education forms the backbone of a country, isn't it? If you don't educate
the next generation,
if you don't educate the next generation, how are they going to be able to control or rule, not like rule the country, but in a certible way of being able to use the different resources they have, especially if they're in offices of high power? Or
yeah, exactly.
Perhaps.
Well, they're the next generation of politicians. They're going to be the next people to actually run the country, from industrial sectors to actually policing the country and holding these really nice offices in Whitehall.
Yeah.
I think that's very important. Last week, I may have said that maybe the Lib Dems would be good in education. I think after I've seen Suella Braverman and her pitch in the Reform press conference last week, after I've seen these reforms, after seeing the Tories asking to, or scrapping, or intending to scrap, rather, the interest, extra, the extra 3% interest on Plan 2 of student loan debt, I'm far more, not politicised, but I've got a lot more background and I've a much more credible opinion than I did last week. And now I'm completely against the Liberal Democrats, not fully, but now I'm looking more towards parties, maybe like the Tories, maybe like Reform even, and maybe even Labour. I know, they're quite mad. But I think she's, I think it's quite competent. I think she's not going to beat around the bush. She's not going to start wavering to the left-wing lunatics of the Labour Party like, what's her name? Liz Kendall did over the, all the work and, not pensions, all the benefit cuts that they're trying to do in July, which completely backfired, which was, well, cheers, Liz. another budget crisis from Liz, a Liz, rather. But yeah, I mean, I'm in. Yeah, I think Bridget's doing. I think she's doing a better job than I thought she was doing last week. So good job, Bridget.
And if we're going to touch upon another issue that circulated recently, and that is student debt.
Yes.
Because, okay, students go to university. They're obviously full of excitement. They're going to learn a new course. Mm. They obviously take out the student loan. They get out of university. And suddenly they're struggling to pay it back.
Yeah.
Then suddenly they can't afford a house. Then they can't get a job. This leads to more unemployment.
Yep.
In terms of the Tories are talking about cutting interest rates on student loans, which I think is not a bad idea.
Yeah.
That would be quite a good idea. But in terms of Laura Trott talking about maybe closing off specific courses.
Yeah.
I sort of agree with that in a sense, but I don't think that the door to a course should be completely shut off.
No.
People have interest in that. History of art. It might not be the most profitable course, but people, it depends what you want to work for. Do you want to work for money or enjoyment?
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. And especially with, I think that people should know what they're getting themselves into.
Yes, I totally
I think
agree.
That courses should provide how much is the loan and what are the chances of them paying it off.
Yep.
Because if they look at it and they think they can't pay this off, there is no point taking that risk. Go for something that's a lot safer.
Mm.
And especially Laura Trott talking about not letting students into university.
Yeah.
Will that not lead to certain universities closing down, Rory? Yep. Do you not think?
Yeah, I think that's a very well thought through opinion that I wholeheartedly agree with. I think there should be a lot of, not forecasting, but you should give people a bit of background, let them know what they're getting into, as you said. I do support the proposals by Kemi Badenoch that she announced. It was either today or yesterday. Maybe it was today.
I think it was today, maybe, yeah.
On scrapping Plan 2, which has garnered a lot of criticism over the years. And that was implemented by the Tories themselves. And I think it's now, if they want to get rid of it, it's obviously a clear testament. Oh, yeah, we did something wrong. If you did something wrong, then it is clearly wrong if you've admitted it to yourself. So it is inherently a very bad plan. I think the closure of maybe some universities. Look, there are some degrees. If people can, I think if people can be assessed on whether they can actually pay back the debt, considering what plan they've taken and what job they're trying to go into.
So like an income-based
if you're going to be an artist, reform. If you're going to be an artist and you're going to sell paintings at like, I don't know, $10,000 a piece, then you're obviously going to be able to clearly
repay your student loan.
Repay your debt quickly. But if you're going to be an artist or an art teacher at another university, which maybe doesn't have as high a wage, then maybe that's not the most sensible thing.
I think there should be. I think there should be like brackets in terms of income. If you're in a certain income threshold, then there should be a certain amount that you need to pay back.
Yep.
If you're maybe not on a great wage, why would you Why are you setting the loan so high? Why do they need to pay so much back? That's going to put more stress on them, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I can't really get my head around is, yes, obviously some people are not as well off as others, but why do, like, I think if the whole idea of, yes, okay, you don't have to pay back your debt, because obviously really low-income earners don't have to pay back their student debt.
No, but that's only if they don't pay it back for a very long time.
Yes, I know, but I think the whole concept of that is probably, that's ridden with loopholes. In principle, I do agree with it. But also, you're going to get people who are not going to work, and then they're going to say, oh, yeah, well, I haven't paid my student debt in a long time, so now I'm going to be exempt from it. I think, yes, there are obviously some of those people. I recognise their concerns. I understand what their kind of backgrounds are and their circumstances. But I think that it's not them who are the problem. It's going to be the people who are just going to use that as another loophole, yeah, to say, oh, I'm not going to pay the money back to the government or anything, because you should pay the money back to the government. They've given you the opportunity to go to university to learn a proper skill. And if you're not utilising that skill purely because you don't want to work, then I think that's a huge problem. And that's totally on you.
Yeah, and I think in terms of policies that maybe Labour could introduce, I think caps on tuition, maybe. I think that maybe certain courses should not be priced as highly as they are now, if you know what I mean by that. And then there should be a limit to how much you can ask a student to take out. Really.
Yes, I think there's a point where it gets too much. I think you should think about it. I think the government have got to think about it as if they're a bank. I don't think you should be giving huge loans to people who have a very low expectancy of paying it back. And I think that's obviously going to have a lot of consequences. Oh, yes, you're discriminating people based on their economic background. But I think that's quite sensible. I mean, if you're going to give money to people that you know that you're not going to, who are not going to be able to get it back to you, any sensible person is going to be like, no, you can't have that money because I'm not going to get it back. And that's not a good economic deal for me. You could argue, yes, the government serves the people, and so by serving the people, you're serving me, so you can give me the money, because actually I've paid a lot of money in taxes. But I think it's a very delicate and fragile issue that has got a lot of, I don't want to say bullet holes, but a lot of loopholes that people can kind of sift through. And I think people who actually are, not going to say good, but people who are honest and actually well-minded and repay their debts, and people who are also struggling with their debts, trying to pay it back because they're committed to paying it back, because that's kind of their moral duty, I think I have a lot of respect for. But it's the people who are deliberately, key word, not to work, not to to rely on benefits the entire time. I think that's now having a negative consequence on the people who are actually trying to create work, trying to support themselves, because they've got immense pressure, because even though they're paying off their student debt, the interest is just raising it to where it was again. So they're actually trying to pay off the interest rather than actually getting to the loan itself. And yeah, that is the major problem.
Yeah. And I think the supporters of this change to ideas about student debt say that a debt relief stimulates economic participation.
Yeah.
And I feel like that they're right. I mean, they may be pointing out something that's quite obvious, but I think that's something that's been quite overlooked maybe in the past, especially since if we look at, okay, let's take, I don't know, 1990 to 2000.
Yeah.
Okay, tuition was free. But now it's about 27,000. So yeah, you could say that maybe not like, maybe bringing it down a little bit in terms of tuition, not making it zero, but just not making it like really low either. Yeah. And if people are relieved of their debt, there's no longer this pressure to always be chasing this number, isn't it? They want to participate in society. They want to obviously create a strong economic backbone for the country. And this was going to be helpful when there's no more pressure for them to reach that certain number, do you think?
Yeah, I agree.
And that brings to an end our segments for today. So this week, we've seen a political party positioning itself for power, renewed scrutiny of rural conduct, and governments reshaping education policy. And at the heart of it all is accountability, economic, political, and institutional reforms. And the question isn't just what policies are proposed, it's whether they can be delivered responsibly. Thank you for listening to Beyond the Ballot. and join us next week as we continue unpacking the forces that shape politics at home and abroad. See you next time.
See ya.